Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia EV6, the fully electric EV6 with a range of up to 528 kilometres. For more, visit kia.com.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Peter Navin is a firefighter, has been a firefighter with Dublin Fire Brigade for the last 36 years. He's currently a district officer, which is a pretty senior position, pretty responsible position in DFB. He is due to retire in 2 weeks, but he's now faced with an emergency, which I don't think all your skill and training in Dublin Fire Brigade, Peter, for the last nearly four decades will help you. What is the emergency, Peter?
Good afternoon, sir.
How are you?
I am awaiting on a letter.
Okay.
An important letter from the UK.
Okay.
A letter stamped and signed by a judge to say that my foreign divorce in the UK can be recognised in Ireland. And this will allow me to get remarried.
And why is it so important that it has to be? The clock is ticking 14. What's the exact date you retire on, Peter?
2nd of October.
2nd of October. So why is the 2nd of October so critical for this letter?
I've been with my partner now for 10 years.
Okay.
I've been putting it on the long finger.
Right.
I was planning on doing it sometime in the future, but I recently went on a pre-retirement course.
Okay.
And on the pre-retirement course, I discovered that for my benefits to continue in the case of my death, that I must be married before I retire. So, hey presto, I've had to move things as swiftly as possible. By saying as swiftly as possible, I did start this in May.
Okay.
With Her Majesty's Courts and Tribunal Services. I have a divorce over there since last year, but I required a form called a D180 to be stamped and sent here for our own registrar's office to deal with.
Is that because you were married in England? What's the English connection?
Yes, I was married in England and divorced in England.
So if this letter does not come through before October 2nd, 2 weeks hence, if, God forbid, you die, your pension dies with you.
That is correct.
And it doesn't go to your partner unless you are married within the next 14 days.
Yeah, I would need it before the 2nd because it has to go to the General Registrar's Office in Roscommon for vetting by their legal team before they can instruct the Dublin Register that the wedding can go ahead.
Okay, so
I also have to ask my partner.
Have you asked her yet?
I hope she's not listening.
Have you asked her yet?
We have got the ring, Joe, and I will be asking. We were planning on going ahead later in the year with this.
But you're going to say to her, "We need to get. Do you fancy marrying me in the next fortnight?" Okay, so how did this emergency arise? Given that when were you told you needed this document from the UK?
I applied first to the UK in May.
Okay, well, that's a long time ago.
It was gone through all the services over there, or so I was told, on several phone calls and interactions, only to find up until last week on the 6th of September, I got through to an actual person.
Okay.
And they told me that it hadn't in fact been seen by a judge at all.
Okay.
So in fairness to this lady, she doorstepped a judge for me in Bury St. Edmunds Court Services.
Okay.
And explained all the circumstances and got it stamped and stuck it in the post that day.
And it's in... first class in England means the same as an ordinary stamp here in England. It doesn't mean anything particular, does it? It's not registered, it's not...
It's not registered now, Joe. It's not registered. In hindsight, I should have gone over.
Well, hindsight is...
And collected it. Unfortunately, I've been waiting a long time. Every second week, I was promised that this would be here. So I didn't think it was going to come down to this close to the wire.
And you now know... which is, again, it's after. But you now know that if you had if you'd flown over yourself, it would have been worthwhile.
Joe, I could have rolled over at this stage.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I didn't know when it was going to come out.
Okay.
It was a friend of mine went and collected it, stuck it in the post for me, with an airmail sticker on it, and first class postage paid. But Perlon Fish keeps walking past the door every day, Joe, waving.
Now, can you get, can, is it only Bury St Edmunds that can supply this D-180?
I believe Bury St Edmunds is the Cork services that deal. My divorce was last year done through Birmingham.
Okay.
But it then, for the D-180 to be affected for a foreign divorce, it has to go to Bury St Edmunds, who then stamp it.
But could, and again it's a long shot, but could that kind lady who doorstepped a magistrate, and it's, it sounds like it's a formality, the document, the D-180 is a formality, if could she do it again and get a courier over? Or
Joe, I have the line of emails all the way, they've all gone to the GRO, but they need sight of the original.
Yeah. To prove that you are divorced, is it? Yeah.
Yes, yes.
And have you any, I don't want to be too personal either, Peter, but have you any other documentation to prove that you're divorced? That
I have my decree, absolute, my decree now. Yeah. So I have a letter from my ex-wife, who would get on very well with, with me on this, to say that, yes, she was aware of the divorce proceedings and the whole lot, and signed where it says that she signed and everything.
Oh, God.
But, they still need sight here in the GRO of the actual original, rather than the email copy.
Because we were racking our brains earlier on when this conundrum came in, and I remember we had a magistrate on the programme, wrote a fantastic book called Childhood Interrupted, Kathleen Clark, I think it was, wrote a brilliant book about being in a mother and baby home here in Ireland. But it's not any magistrate you want, it's a magistrate in Bury St Edmunds.
That is correct, yeah. Okay. That is correct. The HSE, in fairness, the registrar that's been dealing with me has been absolutely fantastic. I was looking forward to meeting him at some stage. At this stage, though, it's getting further and further away. It'll probably just have to revert and go back to the original plans.
But the original plans...
The original plans was for myself and my partner Carmel to marry further down the line.
Yeah, but that's completely thrown out by the fact that you're officially leaving Dublin Fire Brigade after nearly four decades paying into a pension fund. You're officially leaving there in a fortnight.
On the 2nd of October, yeah.
Yeah, but if you were, God forbid, to die, your pension built up over nearly 40 years is gone.
Correct.
Your next of kin... Even if she becomes your next of kin in 2 weeks and 2 days, will not be entitled.
Yeah.
Whereas a married couple as in most pensions, the marriage, a portion of the pension, if someone dies prematurely before their partner, so to speak, a portion of the pension will go to that partner. In your case, you can't prove that it's your partner. That it's
within the city council, there are two schemes, the old scheme with us all orphans, and the new scheme, I think it's children and survivors.
Okay.
Under the old scheme, you have to be married before you retire. On the new scheme, you can marry at any stage.
So, okay, so we're asking.
I joined in 85 and signed up to the old scheme, so I can't gripe, Joe. I should have had all my ducks in order. It was just an eye opener for me on the online pre-retirement course.
Mm-hmm.
I went, oops. Should have thought of this earlier.
Has Brexit have any influence on it?
Yes, I got my divorce in a foreign jurisdiction now. It's termed as a foreign divorce.
It's just like this year, the Sam Maguire went to a team outside of Europe, as someone said, because of Brexit. And so Brexit did disadvantage you.
Well, I'd say Brexit is probably the reason that my very important letter is sitting somewhere. I know it was sitting in an outgoing mail pile in Bury St Edmunds, in a very important outgoing mail pile for 5 weeks, only to find out that it wasn't even sitting in there in the first place, that it hadn't been in fact stamped by a judge.
And there'd be no misaddress on it, we could ask people if your address is...
No, I've written back to the person that posted it to check the address, and Mr. Dean Avon, written all over it, the full proper correct address.
Mm.
But
unfortunately,
it wasn't registered.
Yeah.
So.
I just wonder, if we had a listener in Bury St Edmunds, could they go to the court and ask for a copy? Or try and get their attention, or try and get them to ring you, or try and...
At this stage, Joe, I would do anything. I'd quite happily go over tomorrow if I thought. Yeah, but they don't take callers. It took me, I would say, 4 months to get through to an actual person. If you email them, you get back an email to say, we hope to reply to you within 28 days.
Okay.
So it took me a long time to get an actual physical person.
Is there any solicitor in Ireland that's dealt with these things before or might have a shortcut or might have an idea for us? 1857 15 815, Joe at rt.ie, if you're listening in Bury St. Edmunds and you think you might be able to help us. Joe at rt.ie, if you're listening and you're a legal eagle in the UK and you might have an idea for Peter. Peter, you served where for your 36 years?
I served most of my time between Dolphins Barn and Talla. I've done a short stint in Tara Street as a turntable ladder driver.
Oh, wow.
And then climbed the ladder itself and ended up in Dolphins Barn, back for serving where I lived. So.
And the memorable, well, there'll be lots of memorable incidents, but... Well, you weren't there for the Stardust, sure you weren't, thankfully.
No, Joe, no. I came in because of the Stardust. I was class 1, 1985, started the first class out in the OBI Training Centre.
Because they beefed up the Fire Service after the
Fire Service Act was improved and recruitment started. So, Joe, it's been a fantastic career. It's absolutely brilliant service. The people, the men within it.
Oh, yeah. All the women, yeah.
It's people that make jobs, yes, the men and the women, but it's the people that make the job, so the people within the job and the people of Dublin. It's been fantastic. It's a great camaraderie within the job.
And just explain to listeners, the turntable ladder is a massive truck that goes to high-rise fire. Well, it goes to every, I think it's on every call-out between the two canals in Dublin because of the nature of the buildings. But that's a big, big truck. What's it like driving that in the mad Dublin traffic, which is back again?
I would have been driving it 20 years ago when the traffic was a little bit less.
Okay.
But yes, fairly hectic. And we have a new one on order, Joe, that's even bigger.
Okay.
And we're going to have to look at high rise outside of the two canals.
Absolutely.
You're quite correct saying that for now we've been between the two canals and outside on request. But if you look at Talla is a small city in itself with high rise, and Talla isn't alone out there. So yeah, they're going to be expanding. They're going to have to look at
putting a TL out in Talla or whatever. Yeah.
Putting some sort of aerial response capability out. And the only other place that has one is Dunleary. It has a snorkel out there that responds with them as well. It has different capabilities than the turntable ladder.
Okay.
But yes, so 36 years the mud, the blood and the booze.
Okay.
It's time to step aside and let the young guns step up.
Yeah.
It has been fantastic. I wouldn't regret it for a second.
So now we're getting we'll take every call about Peter Navin, the retired. But I want someone to help us get this D180 within the next fortnight. John Paul Gibbons, you know Peter. Go ahead, John.
Yeah.
John,
how's it going, Joe?
What do you want to say?
Just Peter's a terrible, terrible nice man. I know him through Dublin Civil Defence, Auxiliary Fire Service.
Oh, very good.
He's a terrible, terrible nice man. He does a lot for the Talla area and just really hope he gets sorted out. I just listen to your show every day, you know. He's a terrible, terrible, terrible nice man. Terrible nice man, you know. Terrible nice man, you know.
And it's a fortnight now. We've only a fortnight.
Yeah, I know.
It's the most, one of the most unusual mysteries we've ever tried to solve. Is there any way we can get a D-180 from Bury St. Edmunds within the next it'd have to be within the next week, really, because then Peter has to get married, then to get it up to the GRO, for the GRO to stamp and approve it, which they will. They're very good up there, and a lot of it is online at the minute. They're a brilliant office, really helpful. You're in the Auxiliary Fire Service. What's that, John?
It's basically voluntary fire service with Dublin Civil Defence Ireland, and I've been in the last 5 years, you know.
And you're on a fire truck?
No, I'm actually driving a school bus one at the minute.
No, but what do you do in the civil defence?
But basically we just back up Dublin Fire Brigade and then other stuff. Like we do, obviously, you know, Peter's involved with Talafest every year. It has been on due to COVID the last 2 years, but he looks after the Talla Fest and Talla Village there, and we're basically there to cover it, just make sure nothing happens and stuff like that, you know. So it's a brilliant organisation as well.
Brilliant
organisation. Yeah. And people tell you that as well, you know.
Always there when there's an emergency. It's great
That's
to
it.
It's great. Okay. Okay. Thanks, John Paul Gibbons from Tala, wishing Peter Navin. Peter Navin, as you've heard, is about to retire after 36 years in Dublin Fire Brigade in a fortnight. If he does not get a D180 form from a court, which is looks like it's lost in the post at this stage, his partner, he wants to get married, obviously for love, but he also wants to get married because he's 2 more weeks in Dublin Fire Brigade, and if he's not married before he leaves, if he will have a pension after 40 years, of course, if he was to die before his partner, well, then the pension is completely gone, unlike a couple who are married. Peter, I think you said in your email as well, what was it, yesterday was one of those crazy days where everything went wrong.
Joe, yes, the whole world was in a state of chaos yesterday, yeah. Joe.
What happened?
I went in to renew my driver's license.
Okay.
I've recently moved to Galway.
Okay.
As part of my retirement, I'm going to settle down in the beautiful city of Galway.
Well done.
My driver's license is out of date since August. I was aware that there's an extension granted, but I wanted to get my new address put on as it's a legal requirement. So I went and done my medical, went and done my eyesight report, and turned up, made an appointment online using my GovID and all my licence details, was granted an appointment and turned up yesterday. And we told, no, I can't actually renew it because of the extension that was granted until next March at the earliest. But they would, however, capture my photograph, capture my signature electronically, and send me out a brand new, out-of-date licence with my new address on it.
The exact same
that they have to do to issue a new one, but they couldn't take into account my medical report or my eyesight report, which will be out of date by the time March comes around because they can only last for 1 month. So bureaucracy, the computer said no yesterday.
The computer said no, really did. Somebody points out, Peter, could yourself and your partner... I didn't catch your partner's name, right? It's up to yourself.
Carmel.
Could yourself and Carmel fly to the UK and get married?
We possibly could, Joe. We're springing this on a lot of people. There's a lot of people going to be saying good grief, listening to the radio. It was going to be a small, informal wedding, and then later on, hoping to go back to the original plan, which was the beautiful St. Nicholas Collegiate Church in Galway. We possibly could at this stage, seeing as I have a... And then I'd have to come back and get it recognised by the DCC, but I'm sure the DCC, being the body that they are, they'd be ever so forthcoming. Yes, that is a possibility, Joe. We actually took last week off because we thought we'd be married the week before. So we took last week off to honeymoon around Connemara.
Okay.
We had to drive back every day to check the post. So Clifton and Dogs Bay and everywhere else, beautiful Carrow Row, we had to drive back each day to Galway to check the post.
Okay, well let's see if any of our listeners, be there here or in the UK, got any ideas of how to solve this before the clock strikes midnight.
I think actually that's possibly the best suggestion yet.
What, fly over and get married?
Fly back to Blighty.
Well, Blighty is Northern Ireland as well, contentiously, as
it
you
is,
know.
That's up there, Joe. If I don't get my letter in the next... I honestly need it within the next few days.
Okay.
The registrar in Dublin has said he will get me in ASAP, needs the nod from the GRO in Roscommon. So.
Okay, well, we'll keep in touch, Peter. Thanks indeed. Thanks. I see, because I followed Dublin Fire Brigade on Twitter, as so many people do. It's a great Twitter feed.
Fantastic.
And
I'm reading. The pair of guys that run that Twitter account, award winning. Absolutely brilliant.
Training with the class of 85, District Officer Peter Navin, after 36 years' service to the city and county. That's very important to point out. Dublin Fire Brigade covers Dublin City and the county. Training with the class of 85, he spent most of his career in D-Watch, with the majority of it based in Dolphin's Barn. District Officer Peter Navin, we wish you a long and healthy retirement. Okay, Peter, either way, I think it's a bizarre dilemma to be in, but hopefully somebody might have an idea out there. Post have done it for us before. They found letters. Anna McHugh was brilliant, but I just wonder, do you think it ever got here? Do you think was there?
I don't know.
Was the correct postage?
I know with Brexit that there's been delays. Yes, correct postage, correct address, all affixed properly.
But the address, we won't give out the address. But there's an envelope somewhere with Peter Navin. Is the address in Galway? I don't want the exact address, obviously.
It is indeed.
Yeah, so it's Peter Navin, blah, 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 Galway, County Galway, Ireland. Peter Navin, Galway. Pardon the two towns mentioned there. And post, by the way, we've been on to Anna already, and as per usual, extremely helpful. And they think it might be the Royal Mail, and wonder what might have gone wrong over there. Okay, yeah. There should be enough of us around to try and do something in the next fortnight. Okay, Peter.
He's hoping.
Okay, Peter Navin, thanks for your service. Best wishes to you and Carmen and your extended family. Joe at rt.ie if you're trying to contact us from Bury St. Edmunds.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Okay, well, the students are back, but are they back in college? A number of people have contacted us, beginning with Breda. Breda, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
And good, thanks. What's the question you want to ask, Breda?
I want to ask what Trinity College is doing about getting its lecturers back into the assembly halls and to give lectures in person. And the reason I say that is because I know of several students across many disciplines, including business, economics and social studies, European studies and engineering, all of whom, despite Minister Harris's assurances that they would have college in person this season, have all been told, sorry, it's online. And that is simply just not acceptable. It is not good enough. I have read and understand Trinity College's position on this. They say we're in the city centre, our buildings aren't sort of fit for purpose, given that they're archaic. But that is not the case, for instance, for their business school, which is a spanking new building.
Yeah.
And in my view, it is not acceptable that some of the lecturers are using pre-recorded lectures from before, and they're not even attending in person. So what is the public service money going towards?
The lectures went out last year?
I don't. All I can say is that I know of students in the European Studies discipline who have attended pre-recorded lectures.
But you're saying that are you saying that that lecture is being repeated simply from last year?
You'll need to ask Trinity College that. I can't speak to that, but I would have thought that if the lecturers need to be online, that as a limit, would they not at least do it in person and live so that they can engage in a discussion live, as distinct from potentially having the facility to have it pre-recorded from before? And, well, you know, these lecturers are being paid. So I suppose my main issue is, if it's really about health and safety, why is Trinity College not able to do what many of the other colleges are doing, where they'll do a pod rotation system? By way of example, I know one individual who, lo and behold, got the delighted news on Friday that she could have one in-person lecture yesterday, and turned up and absolutely no issues about it. So that's the exception to the rule. They were also told their tutorials would be in person, which are groups of approximately 10. And again, they've got the news, they're online. So what is going on in Trinity College?
Okay, how long is it since your daughter's actually been at a live person lecture?
With the simple exception of the joyous lecture of yesterday, March 2020.
18 months.
Yes, it's not acceptable. It's not for my daughter. It's for the whole cohort of third-level students that have been put in this position, and it's not acceptable. We're paying for public servants to provide lectures. If UCD can be back in full, I know several people that are, including a family member who's in full-time into college and having in the social stuff that goes with that.
Okay, Joe at rt.ie. Francis is also contact. Francis, you are a student in Trinity.
Yeah, I am indeed.
And what's the situation?
Okay, so I'm currently in second year, and in first year I didn't get into campus once. One lecture, not one tutorial. And then, you know, it was promised next year you'll get your college experience, everything back to normal. But that's just not the case at all. There's been so many emails from Trinity, you know, telling us to hold on. But, like, I think everyone's just sick of it at this point. like even tutorials with less than 20 people are still online. There's absolutely no need for that. And there's so many rooms that we could safely do it. Other colleges are doing it. And we just are waiting, like, when are just we going to follow?
And are the students, well, you see, you can't organise. Can you organise a protest or?
Yeah, there actually is
COVID regulations allowing.
Oh, yeah. There actually is one going on Wednesday.
And what have you heard about these pre-recorded lectures that are simply being replayed?
Yeah, so some of the lecturers are doing them live, and so it'll just be a live streaming. But there are others that are basically just a video that the lecturer will go through a PowerPoint. They'll just kind of do a voiceover, flicking through a PowerPoint. So, and they'll upload them every week.
Can you ask questions?
No, absolutely not. It's just literally a video and you just click into it, watch it yourself. You can watch it any time of the day. So yeah, there's no interaction at all.
Okay. Professor Neville Cox is the registrar in Trinity College Dublin. Neville, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Jeff.
First of all, this point that some lectures, video lectures, are being replayed from last year, is that true?
Well, it depends on context. And I think it's important to be sort of clear about what actually happens here. So there are different sort of teaching methodologies within a particular course. In many cases, if you have information which doesn't alter year on year, you might have a situation where there is a recorded lecture and then discussions feeding off that in subsequent classes. But from my perspective, having lectured through last year, all my lectures would be live. Mm-hmm. All my lectures this year would be live. Just in relation to what's been said, mm-hmm. and I fully understand the frustration of students and so forth and so on. I have two children myself in university at the moment whose very short university careers have been hugely interrupted by the cruelty of the pandemic. So I'm deeply empathetic to it. But I would make the point that from a lecturer standpoint, from my standpoint, mm-hmm. I deeply miss it too. I literally just come from my first in-person lecture in 18 months, and it was incredibly emotional because we miss it hugely. We absolutely accept that there is no substitute for the joy of a face-to-face experience. So it's certainly not the case that any Trinity lecturer or any university lecturer that I know of would want not to have face-to-face teaching. But just perhaps to explain, from Trinity's perspective, obviously we take into account all the public health advice that we've received. We acted in accordance with guidelines from NPHET and from other public bodies. And we made the decision, which we had to make, having regard not merely to the oldness, as it were, of our buildings, but also to issues like the level of ventilation and like the level of size of classroom. We made the decision in terms of what we could provide.
Neville, there's lots of new buildings in Trinity College.
There are new buildings, absolutely. Someone mentioned the building, the business school, which is the arts block
is a relatively new building.
The arts block in Trinity isn't that new, and there's also the lecture theatres, whereas they're properly ventilated in the normal run of things, just aren't properly ventilated insofar as the requirements that would flow from a pandemic are concerned. But the key thing is that.
So a building built and opened in the late 1970s, early 1980s doesn't have proper ventilation.
Well, so proper ventilation in the normal run of things, it does. But the kind of ventilation requirements which would have to apply in terms of safe teaching is something totally different.
So is the arts block completely closed?
No, it's not. No, people can go into it. And there are, and key thing to mention about the way in which Trinity is doing business is that we are moving to a phased resumption of full teaching activities. So just perhaps for your listeners, what we currently have, and this is the plan that was agreed with government, is teaching where there is a 1 metre social distancing requirement, which given the size of classrooms, and particularly the size of particular class cohorts, will limit the amount of face-to-face teaching which is available. Although we are trying to be expansive of this, we're opening up new buildings which would normally be used for teaching, exam hall, for instance. We have a marquee which is in New Square, which is going to be open. So we are trying to be innovative in this regard. But if someone's in a very, very big class, the reality is that our lecture theatres simply aren't big enough at the moment to accommodate this. But the important thing is that by the end of next month, and given NPHET guidelines about October the 22nd being this key date, we're going to move to no social distancing. And at that stage, we would hope that the amount of face-to-face, of the percentage of face-to-face classes that we'll be able to offer, will be somewhere in the region of 90%.
And what is it at the moment, Neville?
At the moment, well, and I don't want to be in any sense misleading here, at the moment it's in the region of 45 to 50%, but the problem is that doesn't mean that every student is going to get 50% of teaching, because it will depend on the size of their class. So if you're in a very substantial first-year class with a couple of hundred people in it, it's going to be difficult for those classes to be accommodated in any lecture theatre with social distancing, because you simply can't provide.
Okay, I let Francis and Breda come in. Francis, do you want to ask a question? Breda, do you want to ask a question? Who wants to come in? Or make a point, rather, Francis or Breda?
Francis. Yeah, I'd just like to say, I know that it's been mentioned, oh, we have so much empathy for you guys, but I think that's just the last thing students want to hear anymore. We don't want to hear that you feel sorry for us. We just want to hear that things are changing and we're in, because there's been so much progress with vaccines and everything. So why on earth are we not able to go into college and get an education? And why do we have to fight for it?
Yeah, perhaps a good reply to that, because, of course, I mean, and I appreciate what you're saying, but just factually, I do have empathy for students in this situation. I would make the point that, I mean, we receive multiple communications from students and parents saying, why isn't there more face-to-face teaching and so on? But we also receive communications from students and parents saying, why are you imperiling my health by having any face-to-face teaching? And from our perspective, honestly, both as a public body and as people who actually genuinely do care about the interests of their students, we simply have to balance these two concerns. We are, as it were, a microcosm of society. So, in other words, just a society.
Yeah, but it also, if
normal, we absolutely have to take responsible steps. And the only responsible step that we could have taken is acting in accordance with the public health guidelines and the guidelines from our own health experts.
Yeah. Can I come in on that?
Breda, yes.
Yes. I mean, Mr. Cox, in terms of what you say about the larger lecture theatres, could there not have been something innovative like a pod system, the 60 students one week, 60 another, or maybe both video streaming for those that don't want to come in, or where the numbers are excessive, and also the in-person facility? Like, just some creativity in the approach. Yeah. Also, I know this is going to be revisited on the 22nd of October, where there's the hope and aspiration that Trinity College will leave behind the social distancing. But that's reading week in Trinity College. So therefore, we're really into the beginning of November.
There's no
and
lectures.
And then you're probably four weeks into Christmas exams. So realistically, you're talking about 7 weeks this term with, you know, online lecturing. And I really, the reason I'm on is that's just too long to wait. The rest of the country has moved on. Many of us are in office environments, you know, all over the country where it's not perfect from a ventilation perspective, but we're managing on rotas and by just managing the numbers. And if UCD can do it, you know, and many other colleges can do it, why can't Trinity College move ahead?
Well, I mean, I suppose, obviously, first of all, not all universities are, as UCD, are fully in person. And I can't speak meaningfully to the decisions that UCD has taken, nor indeed to the facilities that they have, which would enable them to do so. All I would say is, again, we didn't make decisions lightly or randomly or saying we just want to impoverish students. We're all absolutely dying to get back in the classroom. We made the decision based on public health and advice, and the simple reality is it would have been irresponsible of us to have ignored public health advice in the interests of saying we want to push ahead with face-to-face teaching. I mean, I would make the point, though, that, again, we are seeking insofar as possible to be innovative. All our teaching, when it is in person, will also have a hybrid element to it, as to say it will be recorded, so for students who are compromised and so forth and so on. So we really are trying to do this. But I mean, I suppose the kind of foundational point is that we have been given very clear public health advice as to what is safe, and we've acted in accordance with it.
And Neville, could the point that France has made that they're not allowed last year, and I know she's speaking for herself, but last year you weren't, the facility wasn't there to ask questions. Is that true, Frances?
During lectures, there would be no time to ask questions or anything. I mean, there were tutorials which you could bring it up. But during the lecture,
could you see your fellow students in those lectures?
No, there's no cameras or anything. It's just a video PowerPoint of a lecture, the voiceover.
Oh, your point. You could have watched it at 4:30 in the morning.
Oh yeah.
Joe, if I could come in on that, this is one of the kind of key things that that arose last year, is that because we are really concerned not to disadvantage people who, for whatever reason, mightn't have the facilities that others would have, in terms of access to laptops or access to quiet working space. This was a key reason why it was made absolutely clear that all lectures, that even those that were delivered live, had to be delivered in person. So I had to, had to be recorded, so that people with connectivity issues or people with perhaps difficult family situations wouldn't be disadvantaged. And I suppose the point that I would make is, you know, none of us chose the pandemic. It's been really impoverishing for everyone. But we really are trying responsibly and as effectively as possible to get through this.
Frances.
Neville, do you expect to see outbreaks of COVID in the colleges that are having students in every day?
I'm a lawyer by profession. I'm not a medic. I couldn't respond meaningfully to that.
Surely the reason,
based on their knowledge.
Why we aren't in is to protect ourselves. So why would we not be in if there are going to be no consequences of having students in every day?
We don't know that there aren't going to be any consequences from this. And there's a risk, I suppose, with something as unprecedented and as gigantic as this pandemic, that hindsight really does become 2020 vision. We're trying to predict ahead. And as a university, we've listened to the guidance which we received from experts. And I think that's probably the sort of the right thing to do.
Who are the experts that you're talking about?
So we're listening to our own public health experts within the university. We're listening to government guidelines, and we are kind of receiving full information on this.
Surely the majority of staff, unless they choose otherwise, the majority of staff and students would be double vaccinated.
Yeah, we would assume so, and it's possible that, you know, again, hindsight being 2020 vision, it's possible that the approach of government health agencies was, or has turned out to be unduly pessimistic. But again,
I know, Neville, you're talking about your own and incredible academic staff in there, but like Luke O'Neill would argue and has been arguing for months now that with antigen testing, that would be a great help in educational settings. Have you any plans to introduce antigen testing as recommended by one of your profs, Luke O'Neill, an expert?
That I don't know. I mean, I can find out, but that I don't know at the moment.
Grania, your point, please.
Oh, hi, Joe. I've just made the point that we have just paid €10,000 for our son who's starting in Trinity this year, between fees and his accommodation for the year. And I just think it would have been really much fairer if Trinity had have told us before we made that commitment that they weren't actually going to be in lecture classes for them.
Could I come in there? It's Breeda.
Yeah, Breeda, yes.
Mr. Cox, I understand that Trinity College may have made its plans based on NEFIT, but as you say, we're
thankfully, Neffet's plans have been turned out maybe to be more pessimistic than has transpired practically. Is there not an opportunity now for Trinity leadership and management team to put heads together expeditiously and to turn this around so that from Monday, lectures can be in person on a rota basis, and that for those that want to attend on a recorded basis or where the excess numbers want to attend, that that can be managed effectively within each school and that they just get back to normal life?
Yeah. So, to the extent, Frida, that I understand the pod system that you're suggesting, I mean, that would be simply impractical. It'd be impossible to organise that by Monday. But I would, and this may be of interest to you, we are constantly trying at this stage, and as effectively as possible, to find new venues in which people can teach. Okay. So things are
there's one, two, three, four, five. I can visualise if I was on, had a drone at the moment. There's five big open spaces in Trinity, in the campus in Dublin City Centre. Can any of them accommodate any more marquees, large prefabs? Yep.
It's really interesting that you raise it. I'm literally looking over one of the squares in Trinity, which is a substantial marquee on it.
Okay.
And we've just made that open and available for certain amounts of large group teaching. Again, just for your listeners, I mean, as important or in terms of one's college life, as important as lectures are also social interaction. And so a lot of our spaces, which would formerly have been kind of bare, are now have facilities in them for students to have social interaction. So there's small marquees and gazebos and seating areas, because we really want to encourage that element.
And there's no, Grania's point about three children, 10 grand fees, and they're staying at home for Trinity Lectures.
Relation to that, Joe, my youngest daughter is in university in the Netherlands, and the fees have been halved by the government over there because of the pandemic. That's number one. Number two, they can attend in-person lectures, but they must book, and only a certain amount of people can turn up on the one day for a lecture, and there is 1.5 metres social distancing between people in the lecture hall.
Okay, is there any plans for the fees to reflect the teaching process? Though I take your argument, even if a lecturer does play the video he played to class or the lecture he played last year, he or she still has to be paid.
Yeah,
I'm asking Neville, I'm asking Professor Cox that. Yeah. Is there any plans to mediate the fees?
No, and again, it's just an important point to make here, Joe, is in thinking in relation to last year. In fact, in the context, if you contextualise things by reference to the public health emergency, in fact, from Trinity...
Your line's into gone. Is the line gone? Are you back? Are you back, Neville? No. Okay, you're back. Let's take a quick break.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715.
We've been contacted by parents and indeed students of Trinity College Dublin, regretting and indeed complaining about they argue significant absence of face-to-face lectures, even though most of the colleges seem to be doing a lot more face-to-face. And in fairness, Trinity's, the registrar of Trinity, Professor Neville Cox, has been fielding questions. Carmel, your point, please. Carmel.
Hello. Hi, Joe.
Hi.
A little bit like the other parents, we... have a daughter who's gone into second year.
Okay.
You know, we just about managed to get her through last year.
Well, what was that year like? Lectures, contacts?
Tremendous. It was fully online. She didn't meet her lecturers or her course mates. A lot of the lectures, as others have said, were pre-recorded. So no chance to ask questions, no feedback. I mean, I know lecturers are probably under pressure.
Yeah, but could she email lecturers? Surely that's...
I'm sorry to say that, you know, on a lot of occasions that she didn't get a reply. In one case, she got sent a reminder and got a reply about 2 months later.
You say most emails to lecturers, she didn't get a reply?
Yes.
Even a pro forma reply saying, I can't deal with individual queries?
No, nothing. Nothing. And we just, you know, we promised a lot of these young people their dream is to go to Trinity. We took her there as a young child through the gates and whatever, you know, you get your points and you get in there and honestly the dream is just shattered.
Okay.
So we told her, you know, we'll be better this year. Hang in there. And last week after we've paid for accommodation, purpose built student accommodation, it's 10,000 for the year, we've paid half of that.
Yeah.
We find out last week that she has 2 hours of in person lectures. Now one of those hours was already cancelled. And was put on Zoom. So she had 1 hour last week.
Wow.
And she's on a small course. So yeah. I don't really understand.
So you could fit into a bigger room, so to speak.
Well, that's my understanding of it.
Okay. And people just have to monitor it and see the registrar, Professor Neville Cox, is saying they're going to do their best ASAP. Neville, you've also shut. Trinity has been shut to the public for nearly 2 years. UCD didn't shut down. Maynooth didn't shut down. Why are you not letting the public walk through in the fresh air from one end to the other?
Yeah, I mean, again, I obviously can't speak to the approach which other universities have taken. It's substantially dependent on the public health situation at the time. The reality is that the kind of entrances and exits to Trinity tend to be narrower, far more constrained than other universities.
You could drive a double deck bus sideways in through the Lincoln Gate. You could drive a double decker bus through front gate if you open the front gate. To open the arts block gate, you could easily get a single decker bus, and you definitely get a double decker bus. You've got a fire engine, a turntable ladder through Pier Street Gate on numerous occasions. And then it's such an infrastructural part of the city, and it's a gift, it's a privilege to be there, and it's a magnificent location and a magnificent university. Why will you not allow members, have you got security staff on all the gates, stopping members of the public just simply taking their walk home or their cycle home through and across Trinity and out in Lincoln Place or Pier Street or Westland Row?
Okay, so again, and things will change as public health guidelines change. But you have to remember that in terms of both the staff and student body who might be resident on campus and also the students who are here and the constrained spaces, there had to be and has to be a limit on the number of people who can walk through and who can be present in the campus when there's a pandemic on. Again, this is in accordance with public health guidelines. It would have been grossly unfair to our students to say to them, we are actually happy enough for you to have your health compromised by the fact that there are people here, and we regularly get the complaint that our students are, and I disagree with this, but that our students are impoverished in the name of trying to facilitate tourists. The reality of the situation is, again, this had to be managed very carefully. I was present at the first, and Trinity was the first university in August to offer face-to-face commencement, and in an outdoor marquee in the front square.
Yeah, but that's once. Your commencements happen once every 4 years, Neville. I take your point, but it's once.
And the commencements happen what?
A student graduates once in their college lifetime, possibly twice
for the
PhD.
Yeah, there are quite a lot of them, so we would have
but
10 or 11 ceremonies within the point is, Joe, now the front gate is open. It's open to students, it's open to staff. Yeah, all the gates are open to students and staff now.
Yeah, but not to the public.
No, not to the public, because again, we need to be careful.
Well, it's 42 acres.
But the reality is that doesn't mean that you're going to have everyone at one stage spaced out.
All I can tell you, Neville, though I suspect you know this, that people are, your students are very, and their families, we can't speak for all of them, obviously, but there's a serious amount of traffic here. People are upset with the position. But anyway,
true,
you say
again,
you're looking at it.
I would say that I appreciate that, you know, especially the last speaker who spoke about the unhappiness of for last year's first year students. Mm. I absolutely get that. It was a horrific situation. But the reality is we are also getting concerns from people who say, you're opening up too quickly, you're compromising.
Yeah,
you'd health.
Always get that. You'd always, but okay.
But we're seeking to balance all.
Oh, we leave it at that. Yeah. Okay. Is the Book of Kells available to view?
The Book of Kells is available to view for tourists. They have to book in, they have to show that they're vaccinated.
And they have to pay in advance. Okay.
Yeah.
That's Professor Neville Cox at Trinity College. Thanks for taking the time and all our callers. Thanks indeed. Aoife, last Saturday in a park, probably not 40 acres in size, but in a park. And what happened, Aoife?
Okay, well, I was walking with my two boys who are both autistic, and we have a little assistance dog for one of them. So
okay,
he was attached.
Great.
What he likes to do is run. There's kind of an upper pitch, a little hill, and a lower pitch. So he likes to run the length of that pitch and roll down. Now, I had, you know, detached him to be able to do this, but there was training sessions going on the upper pitch. Now, he did run on. I did have to get him and thought, okay, really, we need to go home because I can't, you know, keep running on and off the pitch with him. Now, that didn't go down very well because he's so used to doing it, of course. So I'd asked my other little boy to get our dog and just bring her over so he could kind of get organized to go home. Now, I had just asked him to do that. And at the time, he had looked up and said, oh, look, Mommy, it's a drone.
Okay.
And I didn't take any notice, to be honest, because, you know, my hands were full. I said, oh, just don't mind it. But it was coming towards us from the other side of the pitch. And there was no one else on the pitch bus. There was no one else on the hill.
And do you think this drone was following you and your family?
Well, what I think is it spotted us and came straight for us. There wasn't anyone else around.
And when you say it came straight for you, was it in danger of hitting you?
Oh, no. So I shouldn't say straight for, like, to collide with us. But
no.
It came towards us. It came in our direction.
And could you see the operator?
Well, no.
No, but remember, the operator can see you on the screen that he or she has on their lap or whatever.
Yeah, so...
And did it hang around for long?
Oh, it did. And here's my little boy who'd asked to get the dog, brought her over. My other little boy was in kind of a distressed state, just a temporary kind of a moment in time. He was quite distressed and upset. And I was coping with that. And when I looked up, Killian was saying, oh, hello. And the drone had moved right overhead. And I could see the camera, facing down, and actually came down a little more. Now I was in the middle of trying to cope with this situation. I did. And once my little boy is attached and holding on to the harness, everything is normally calm and we can walk away. Now, when I did get him organized and we began to walk, it just flew off again. Now, I was quite shaken, to be honest, because it was so close. It was just so close and had such a bird. It had a perfect view of my little boy having this, vulnerable moment, and then just flew off. And of course, my other little boy was saying, oh, who's operating it? I didn't see anybody at all. Now, I didn't stay to look. I had a quick look because, to be honest, I just wanted to get them back into the car.
Okay. Which you felt vulnerable. And
I did, of course. It was, I felt quite sick. I got them into the car and I thought, oh, my goodness, I was so shaken. I thought, well, I need to do something. Now, I know myself, I knew when I was making the call, the guards aren't going to be able to do anything. Mm-hmm. I know that. But I felt I had to call. I was shaken, you know, and I felt this is absolutely wrong. What has just happened was in complete violation of our privacy. But my little boys as well, I just felt it was
just
incredible.
And you've no idea where it's going to be used.
Oh, no, not at all. So anyway, the guard, who was very sympathetic, said, look, it's a public place. There isn't anything we can do. You know, people can take photos and videos on their phone and everything like this. But the difference is, of course, if you
posters,
you know, if
whatever,
someone approached you with the camera and kind of gently pushed you aside and videoed, you know, your child at a vulnerable moment, you'd be able to do something. But this was just hovering above.
Okay, very good, very good, very good point, and a very good analogy to drive home the point. Can I ask you another question? Aoife, did you ask the guard if that drone had come, say you had an umbrella in your hand, for argument's sake, and if that drone, which was, and you point out you were the only people in the park and the drone was hovering
on,
over
on that
you,
lower pitch,
on that lower pitch, on that section. The drone was not filming our general community or football match or whatever. If that drone came to a certain level and you had an umbrella and you had hit the drone and brought down the drone, would you be liable? If you felt the drone was interfering in your privacy, and as you say, and you explained it brilliantly, the fact that you're with children, the every child is different, no matter what. And,
oh, it doesn't even matter,
But sometimes to simply to look at an interaction between child, parent, dog or whatever and the group, you can misinterpret it from if you're an outsider. So you're vulnerable. I just wonder if you had hit that drone and they're very fragile, they're very expensive, very fragile, and it came down, would the drone owner, who then would have had to reveal themselves, would they have said, I'm going to sue you for the cost of the drone?
Well, I don't know, but just as you're saying it, what I would say is if I had something, and I'm not speaking for all parents, but I'd be very surprised if a parent of a young child in a vulnerable position didn't say they would have tried anyway, just in a moment of, you know, protecting your child. He was afforded like no dignity, no respect, just very basic things. And I think if it had been in arm's length or if it had been something to throw at it, I'm sure, without thinking, I would have tried to.
Would you?
You know, I don't know, but I think I got feeling as a parent trying to, because that there isn't anybody else around, so you can't, you don't see anybody, you can't actually shout, you know, and say stop. There isn't anything.
Well, what I've got from your description there, Aoife, is that it was creepy. What was going on was creepy.
It was terrible. Like, even as I'm talking about it, I'm not right still. Do you know, I came home, I didn't even say it to my husband till the next day, because I couldn't. Yeah. I was in shock or something. I don't know what it was, but as I started speaking about it again, I thought, no, this is despicable.
There aren't
any words, and I thought, okay, somebody has to know about this. So I just wrote it quickly. And
so can we say the city that the park is in?
Cork. Yeah. Tremor Valley Park.
Tremor Valley Park. Okay.
Yeah.
What time is it on Saturday?
Oh, maybe 10:30 or something like this.
In the morning.
Between 10 and 11.
Yeah, okay. Well, maybe the drone owner will come forward and say, listen, I was only learning how to use it and
this was the most obvious attempt at just getting a nice, close look at a little boy in a state of distress.
Okay. Well, that's a terrible pity, isn't it? That's terrible.
Oh, it's
To operate a drone at that height, which you say was relative, you could see the lens on it, and with that dexterity, that takes some experience, by the way. That does.
I've no doubt. Well, obviously, I don't know. Yeah. But I'd be surprised if this drone operator hadn't done plenty of this kind of work before. And I just felt, even my other little boy, so innocently waving up and saying, oh, hello.
Okay.
I mean, and you feel like I couldn't even say, don't, you know, turn around and look at it. It was just a very, very distressing episode.
Okay, so. And thanks for raising it, Aoife. It's a big, big issue. Like, it will become a bigger issue with so many drones, and they're getting cheaper and cheaper, as you know. What are our rights? What are our rights? And if a drone came near us and we gave it a smack with an umbrella or a golf stick, would we be liable? Okay, Aoife, kind regards to you and your wonderful family and your dog
Thank you so much.
And that magnificent dog. Okay, thanks. That's Aoife in Cork.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Aoife.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Yesterday we had a remarkable call from an 11-year-old, Juliette Tremonen, and she was talking about the new Vodafone ad aimed at her age group and why she felt it was the concepts that were being, not the phone, but the concepts that were in the ads for a phone and a smartwatch, she disagreed with. Now we're going to talk in a few minutes, I hope, to another remarkable 11-year-old. But first of all, I want to go to the man whose life was saved by this 11-year-old, Sean Stroker. Sean, good afternoon.
How are you doing, Joe?
How are you?
I'm not so bad. Good to be here. Good to be talking to you.
Exactly. It's good to be talking to anybody, Sean.
Last Thursday.
Evening,
yeah.
What happened?
But myself and Callum, I introduced him to fishing, you know, during the year there, and we're going out in the lake on Thursday evening.
Okay.
So about 6, 7 o'clock.
Near Tulsk, Kalina Lake.
Kalina Lake, yes, between Elphin and Tulsk. And so we got the boat out, and after a few minutes, we caught a pike.
Okay,
he was very excited about the pike, and he got away, the pike did. But anyways, we caught it in fishing.
Okay.
And I was fishing along with the reeds, and there was a bit of a breeze, and it was blowing my line in on top of the bulrushes.
Okay.
But I got tangled up in the manor, but he rowed the boat up as far as where it was tangled, or where the hook was caught, and
okay.
I'd stand up on the boat to release it.
All right.
And when I did that, a fairly gust of breeze or wind came along,
mm-hmm.
and twisted the boat around and put me off balance when I was about to sit down.
Wow.
And I went head on into the lake, into the water.
Good God. And what's a lake water like at this time of year? Freezing.
I tell you, Joe, it's a bad experience. It's a very bad experience. Very cold and very shocking.
Did you have a life jacket?
I had a life jacket, yeah, but it didn't work properly.
Okay.
And I went into the water,
yeah.
and when I was going into the water, yeah. I thought, I'm going to come back up, and I kept the side of the boat.
Mm-hmm.
And Callum can row me into the bank, get me to safe.
Yeah.
And but when I did come back up, the boat was completely capsized upside down.
Oh, God.
And there was no sign of Callum.
Oh, my God.
I didn't see him. So I was finding it very hard to keep afloat. And I went under the water again. And as far as I know, he took me by the collar and he pulled me back up. And he said to me, keep my head over the water. Grandad, keep your head over the water.
So Callum is out of the boat as well. The boat is upside down.
He actually jumped out of the boat before it went over to save me. He says he was afraid the boat was going to go in on top of me.
My God, an 11-year-old, your grandson.
Yes.
So he grabs you, his granddad,
yes.
and what does he do? And what do you do next?
Well, I was using a board to sit on the had it spread across the top of the board to sit down because the seat in the board were a bit low. You know what I mean? So
okay.
I was more comfortable. So that board, he grabbed that board,
and
he told me to hold on to it.
Great.
And then he put his arm in around the back of my head or my neck, and he got his head in on his shoulder. And he says, keep your head above water. And at that time, we decided to proceed to the bank. And he waited until I got in on terra firma to before he got out of the water himself.
My God.
Unbelievable, Joe.
Unbelievable. An 11-year-old boy saves his granddad.
Yeah, he does.
And you got to the bank.
I got to the bank and I was on my knees and hands and knees. I was finding it very difficult to breathe.
Okay.
And he said I'll run for help, but he left the phone in the jeep,
okay.
and the jeep was just about 50 meters away. And he ran over and he called the mum. And by that time I sort of came to when I got my breath back and I was walking towards the jeep. And then he tried to phone my brother, which were on his land,
okay.
my own place.
Yeah.
And but he didn't ask what any of his mum came down. But I taught him how to, if we ever get into problems, I showed him how to drive the jeep, you know, if we needed to, in an emergency. And he said that he'd drive the jeep, but he didn't. He didn't have to. I was there to manage it.
He was going to drive the jeep.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was. He had it all planned in his head what he was going to do.
I'm just sorry, Sean. Yeah.
I just can't thank him enough, and I want to thank him publicly. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
He was a wonderful boy.
And his mum is on the other line, Jackie Clark.
That's right. Yeah.
Jackie, I don't know. Have you heard the story in such detail?
I have. We're just beyond words, Joe. We're so proud of him. He kept his head, and it's so good that it's a happy ending, and that we're able to talk about it.
And is he in school now? Where is he now?
He's here beside me, so I want to put him on to you.
Okay, yeah, I just have a break to take and we might try and improve the line a little bit because this is going to be an important conversation with this remarkable 11-year-old boy. An 11-year-old boy saves his grandfather in a freezing lake and just has everything boxed off, thinks of everything.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Sean Stroker was out fishing on a lake, a Kalina Lake near Tulsk in County Roscommon last Thursday evening with his 11-year-old son. They're obviously, his 11-year-old grandson, they're obviously very close. Caught a pike, it broke free, and then there was an incident with, as it happens, the fishing rod, the line. Sean had to stand up at one stage and wind caught him and the boat and turned the boat around and tipped him into the water. And then the boat itself was flipped upside down. And Sean was rescued by Callum Clark. Callum, good afternoon.
Hello.
How are you keeping?
I'm good.
Have you learned how to swim, Callum?
Yeah, I'm going to swimming lessons in the Abbey Hotel in Roscommon.
Oh, well done. So how long have you been going there?
All summer.
All summer. And what's that like?
Yeah.
Hmm? Are you enjoying them?
Yeah.
Okay. And who pays for them now? They're that's a private pool, isn't it, in a hotel?
Yeah.
Who got you the lessons?
My granny.
Oh, well done. Well done. Yeah. So you're in the boat. You heard your granddad there. I hope you heard your granddad speak so lovingly about you, Callum. What's your memories of what happened in the boat? Your granddad's standing up and then suddenly he tips over.
Well, he went into the water and then the boat started to tip and the board went out one side with him. So I jumped out and got the board.
Good lad.
And he went down under the water twice.
Wow.
And then I got hit. He was holding onto the board and then he put his head on my shoulder and then I just kicked my legs and then we got into the shore.
Wow. And when you jumped in, did you get a fright with the how cold the water was? Or?
Yeah, it was freezing.
Freezing. And what were you wearing?
A tracksuit.
Tracksuit, okay. So you jump in, and did you jump in especially to try and save your granddad? You didn't fall in?
No, I didn't fall, I jumped.
Well done. Well done. And did you have a life jacket on?
Yeah, I had a life jacket on me, but my granddad's one didn't inflate.
Didn't inflate, okay. So you managed to, this loose board that your granddad had, you managed to get it to him and say, hold on to that, granddad. Mm-hmm. What do you call him? Do you call him granddad or pops or whatever? You call him granddad, Sean?
Granddad.
Well, say hello to your granddad on the other phone there, the other line. Your granddad's on the other line. Just say hello to him there. He wants to say something to you. Go ahead, Sean.
How are you, Callum?
Hello.
How's it going? I just want to thank you so much. I want to thank you in public so the whole world can hear us and hear me thanking you for what you've done to me. I'll never, ever forget it. And I owe you a total debt of gratitude. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. You can ask for anything in your life now, you'll get it.
Callum, go for it. Callum, don't let that opportunity slip. Do you need a new Xbox? Do you need anything new for Christmas?
Funny you should say that, Joe.
What?
PlayStation 5.
Oh, PlayStation 5, that's let the demand start. Okay, that's the first demand. What's the second demand, Callum? You saved your granddad's life.
Mm-hmm.
No, but you're modest, aren't you? Well, well done, Callum. Well done. What class are you in?
I'm in sixth class.
Six, and we had a caller yesterday who was also in sixth class. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to keep up the swimming?
Yeah.
Okay. And did you get a fright at all when you saw your... You know, did you panic, Callum, when you saw your granddad go under?
Well, I didn't really panic, no, because if I panicked, I'd just lose my energy and then I wouldn't be able to save him.
My God. Are you sure, Sean? Are you sure Callum is only 11?
I know. Unbelievable, Joe. Joe, I just can't get my head around it. I can't get the head around of his... He's been so solid through it all.
Okay. And
yeah,
do you play football, Callum? You're in your tracksuit. Do you play football or...
I play football for Tulsk and rugby for Craigs.
Oh, well done. Well done. Okay, Callum, well done. I hope all your classmates know, do they?
Yeah.
Great. Does your teacher know?
Yeah.
What's your teacher's name?
Miss Kilkenny.
Okay. Well, Miss Kilkenny has in her class, 30 or 35. She's 35 heroes, but she's won this week at least. She's won incredible 11-year-old. And his name is Callum Clark. And his granddad tells the nation through Lifeline that this grandson of his was his lifeline. You were his lifeline. Well done, Callum, and well done for keeping your head. Keep up the swimming lessons. Let's start more. Yep. Sean Stroker, go to Míle Maith.
Thank you, Joe.
Go to Míle Maith. Thank you.
And you
should be very, I know you are, very proud of your family. Very proud of your family.
Unreal, Joe.
As they are of you, he didn't hesitate to save his granddad. Well done.
He did not.
Well
no,
done, Callum.
Right,
okay, Slán go fáil. Annette Egan produced, and Ray Darcy's next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Plug into the Kia e-range of EVs and PHEVs.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
1850 715 815. Stays open until 3:15 p.m. Or email joe@rte.ie.